You are listening to a summary of Doing Business in India, a book by Rajesh Kumar and Anand Sethi.
This short book first explores India's history and cultural background, and then provides guidelines for doing business in India. The historical background may seem remote from day-to-day business considerations, but in fact, it is essential to understanding the apparent anomalies of Indian negotiating styles, management behavior, government policies, and so forth. Get Abstract urges readers to be patient with the book's small type and sometimes convoluted sentence structure, for if you are, you will discover much to reward you. The authors examine business challenges in India, including strategic planning, personnel management, government relations, negotiations, and conflict resolution. Any manager investing in, working in, or outsourcing to India will find this book very useful.
History in brief. India experienced its first industrial revolution in the 4th millennium BC. By the 2nd millennium BC, Indians were trading textiles and precious metals with the West. India survived Alexander the Great. Heavy trade with Italy and China. Spice trading with the Arabs and the Portuguese. And colonization by the English. In fact, Great Britain instituted the world's first protectionist trade barriers to protect English textile makers against Indian competition. The then agricultural country won its independence from the British Empire in 1947. The next year, Prime Minister Jawaharlal Nehru, in light of the British socialist tradition, set up government monopolies in key industries and imposed onerous economic controls that discouraged private sector business. Only in 1980 did India begin to slough off socialism's regulatory fetters. By the 1990s, foreign investment was pouring into India. Culture and business. India is culturally part of the West. Its language, Sanskrit, is Indo-European and, thus, closely related to Greek, Latin, and European languages. Like other Westerners, Indians are analytical, emotional, and assertive. Yet, India is distinctive in terms of fundamental societal forces that deeply affect its business environment. 1. The caste system. This hierarchy starkly contradicts Western social equality. For example, Brahmins dominate the computer and software industries, as might be expected given the top status and their emphasis on study and knowledge. The upper castes also dominate Indian politics. 2. The family. Families matter in Indian business to a much greater degree than in the West. Family businesses account for 7/10 of India's market capitalization and 75% of its employment. Indians have extended hierarchical families. Luxury automakers have not achieved their hoped-for sales volume in India because they failed to consider family dynamics. If the highest-ranking member of a family buys a luxury car, no relative of lesser rank will buy that car because it is a symbol of rank. Moreover, family business management may lack focus, may emphasize the short term, and may be unable to distinguish between family interests and business interests. Succession is difficult, and rifts within the family can destabilize the business. 3. Religion. Hinduism escapes easy definition because it so easily absorbs and assimilates other religious ideas. Yet it is profoundly influential. It sees the world as an illusion where reality is beyond reach. It believes that the doctrine of karma rewards and punishes present actions in future lives. Hinduism defines many dharmas or codes of conduct, so individuals in a given situation may have to select which dharma to observe. Therefore, Indians may seem inconsistent, now applying one dharma, and later using another. Why do these issues matter in business? because of the Indian notion that the world is a passing illusion. Indian managers seem conservative, conformist, and less likely to emphasize personal achievements or autonomy. Because Hinduism is both rational and emotional, Indians may be so meticulously logical that as they formulate their best arguments, they lose sight of their goals. And yet, they become quite emotional when challenged. Hinduism is both individualistic and collective. Horizontally, collectivism expresses itself as egalitarianism. Vertically, collectivism demands adherence to hierarchy. This combination can cause stagnation because people may be unwilling to take initiative without direction from the top, and egalitarian collectivism probably will restrain anyone who considers taking initiative. Other factors that have a serious impact on how Indians do business include 1. Sensitivity to context. An Indian may behave very differently in different places. Westerners may find this extreme flexibility suspect and possibly hypocritical. 2. Paralyzing idealism. Indians may refuse to settle for less than the ideal, since the ideal is often unachievable. Often nothing gets done. 3. Corruption. Indian business is saddled with bribery and corruption. Many countries have problems with corruption, but in India it is particularly widespread, although people acknowledge its negative economic, political, and social impact. 4. Cricket. This game is a passion in India, and the foreign businessperson who takes the trouble to learn to talk knowledgeably about cricket will be ahead of the pack. Cricket is one of the three factors that unify almost all Indians. The other two are local food and Bollywood movies, known for their heroics and convoluted plots. Indian business strategy. Foreign firms that succeed in India begin by carefully researching the market and making themselves nearly indigenous. When they don't, they fail. Kentucky Fried Chicken, KFC, did not adapt its product to Indian tastes, did not adapt its pricing to Indian market standards, and did not provide vegetarian options in a largely vegetarian society. So it failed. McDonald's, in contrast, adapted its menu item names to India, adapted the taste of its food to Indian preferences, and included vegetarian options, all at locally competitive prices. McDonald's succeeded. Such companies discovered that marketing in India requires careful analysis and double-checking of market information. Managers must emphasize building personal relationships with distributors and customers. This is critical to getting business or gathering information, particularly heed data that runs contrary to your assumptions. Multinational firms must be responsive to the local political, cultural, economic, and social realities. The necessary degree of adaptability exceeds the normal think globally, act locally conventional wisdom. Organizationally, the following factors are critical. 1. Top management must have extraordinary cultural adaptability. Korean retailers or chaebols succeeded in the durable goods market in India, although their top management is foreign, because they instituted a powerful, competent second tier of Indian managers. They set up Indian brands, advertised extensively, and created large distribution networks, reaching to the remotest corners of the country. 2. Create a culture that encourages and rewards performance. Without such a norm, teamwork may be difficult to achieve. Prioritize high-quality production. Focus on ethical behavior and nurture teamwork. 3. Ethical standards are critical. Avoid conflicts and focus on fairness. 4. Keep close links between parent and subsidiary companies. Indian employees must feel that they are part of the global organization. ST Microelectronics, an Italian company, brought 40 Indian engineers to Italy for 2 years of training. The program built a sustained sense of connection and loyalty, which carried over when the engineers trained other staff members back in India. Expatriate executives also must adapt to India ways. GE has succeeded in India because its top management is committed and responsive to local concerns. Scott Bayman, CEO of GE India, has lived there 11 years. He and his wife speak Hindi, eat Indian cuisine, shop in area stores, and participate in the local social life. 5. Recognize that cultural adaptability will be a problem. Managers need extraordinary psychological and emotional skills and training to develop the cultural intelligence they need to deal with India. You will know you have succeeded if you can build good working relationships, communicate well, and get people to work together. Communication in India. To establish your business in India, focus on its indigenous nature. Set long-term goals and targets, and make decisions with these targets in mind. Localize in as many ways as possible, so you adapt to the Indian market. That sounds like a standard formula, but you may be surprised when Indians act in ways that challenge Western beliefs and assumptions. An Indian man may take the hand of a foreign business partner and hold it as they walk down the street. In the West, this would be interpreted as a sexual overture. In India, it expresses only friendship. When Western managers find that their expectations are not valid, they may feel frustrated and angry, which could lead to erroneous judgments. To avoid such issues, 1. Study and understand how Indians communicate. For example, Indians are unwilling to say no. Their failure to say no does not mean yes. 2. Address your negative emotions. Negative emotions may be unavoidable, given the consistent and numerous challenges that Indian communication styles and cultural assumptions present to Western expectations. Recognize that these issues are cultural. You are not being singled out. Stay calm. Analyze your circumstances. Avoid anger and look for the situation's positive aspects. 3. Do not debate ideology. Indians are idealistic and nationalistic. Westerners are pragmatic. Debating means pitting pragmatism against idealism. Little common ground exists, and you will be better off if you don't try. 4. Be positive about India. Indians are nationalistic, so visitors who seem to respect and value India are likely to receive a better reception than those who do not. Government relations. The Indian government is one of the most difficult factors in Indian business life. Decades of socialism have left a serious and not altogether positive imprint. Being intensely nationalistic, Indians are suspicious of foreign enterprise. For Westerners, a contract is a contract. Indians may feel that fairness is more important than written contracts. For example, Indian nationalists advocated abrogating contracts with Enron on grounds that the contracts were not fair. Indian bureaucrats tend to be motivated primarily by the bureaucratic world, not by whatever is happening in business. They are arrogant and indifferent to what business people think of as real-world events. Moreover, corruption is widespread in India, including indirect costs as well as bribes, and it is pervasive among many professions. Indian firms mobilize their government to defend their interests against foreigners. This defensiveness has generated laws and regulations that are very deleterious to foreign interests. The Indian software industry's recent success and the growth of outsourcing helped moderate the government's disposition to be against the private sector. An Indian's default attitude toward foreign business is not receptivity and warmth. Be extremely sensitive to nationalism. Make your operations as indigenous as possible. Consider developing products and services for those at the bottom of the economic scale. When it comes to trying to reach agreement, be flexible, not rigid. Conflict resolution in India. Negotiations require four phases: 1. Pre-task explorations, 2. Exchange of information, 3. Persuasion, and 4. Concessions. The Indian negotiating style has several characteristics. 1. Negotiations are for problem solving. Indian negotiators often emphasize cleverness and see negotiation as an exercise in solving problems. Their idealism and high aspirations mean that they are likely to be critical of any alternative views and intent on demonstrating that they are right, rather than emphasizing what is workable. 2. Idealism. Being idealists, Indians are inclined to argue on moral grounds. Thus, they find it difficult to make concessions. Western negotiators will find them contentious. 3. Equity and fairness. Indians are extremely sensitive to fairness. Even if you negotiate a contract, if they see it as unfair, it probably won't endure. 4. Poverty syndrome. Indians fear poverty and sense themselves as being on the edge. So they may attempt to renegotiate or insist on more of a contribution from the foreign partner than the contract anticipates. Because their notion of fairness may create an expectation that foreigners should be generous, failure to be open-handed may lead to animosity. The meaning of contracts. Contracts do not mean the same thing in India as in the West. For the Westerners, contracts are transactional. They provide a legal and psychological defense against the breach of a commercial agreement. Indian contracting, by contrast, is ideological. The Indian notion of reality as something illusory is echoed in a parallel idea that contracts are fluid. Indian attempts to renegotiate or reinterpret contracts may cause Westerners to question their counterparts' sincerity, ethics, and honesty when, instead, the real issue, as usual, is cultural differences.